I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country. 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, I'm going to kick off by telling our listeners all about the mighty Murray River.
Right.
You know, it's one of the longest rivers. Well, I think it's rated as the seventh longest river in the world. It is huge.
And it changes name as well.
It does.
Yes.
It does. And you know, they had a flag of their own way back in the day.
Wow.
The mighty Murray River had its own flag.
Wow.
And we're going to tell all our listeners all about that. Very historical little discussion that I have there.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank goodness for Wikipedia. Oh, and then after that.
You're going to be chatting to Neville Purtell, who's the Managing Director of Purtell Group, and he's the owner Depot Historic Vehicle and Memorabilia Collection. What a mouthful that is.
Yes, the Depot is where they've got all those sensational motor cars
yes,
and buses.
That is a must-see.
That is a must-see in Deniliquin. Now, if you are passing through Deniliquin and you miss the Depot, you've missed Deniliquin.
Yes.
Because that is absolutely unbelievable.
Yes, it is.
It's very mind sort of blowing because you walk into the office.
Yes, it's very deceiving.
It looks like just a shop.
Yes.
And then you go through this door and it is huge.
Yep.
It's two levels.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Don't miss that one in Deniliquin, listeners. And then straight after that.
You're going to be speaking to Ali Orchin, who's the Treasurer of Sponsorship Coordinator for the Mungandai Show.
Now, the Mungandai Show we've not been to.
No.
So
Sounds good.
This one I did with her over the telephone. Yes. Absolutely incredible. And you know it's been running for 126 years.
Wow.
And boy, aren't they tired.
Yes.
So I asked her, how long's it been running for? 126 years.
Wow.
Absolutely unbelievable. Don't know of
might
any.
Might have to add it to our list.
Well, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely. I don't think we've been to any that have ran that length of time.
No.
And then, of course, we finish up with
Shannon Kosh, who's the secretary for the Hebel Camp Draft event.
Yes. Now, this is an annual event. And they charge you nothing to go to it.
Wow.
You can camp there for free.
Wow, I like that.
Absolutely sensational. And the only thing they'd like you to do is patronise the bar, and they've got a barbecue and a few other things happening. And a lot of the money they get from that goes toward things that need to be done.
Right, so what is a camp draft?
A camp draft, they've got Gymkhana, so they've got junior farmers.
Right.
And they've got the little ones from as young as five.
Wow, okay.
And they're doing, you know how they do the barrel races?
Yes.
They start them out at five.
Really?
That's right. With mum and dad leading the horse.
Right, okay.
But no, they start as young as five, and it's a fabulous event. They got music. They got all sorts of stuff going on.
Wow, have to add that to the
list
as
one,
well.
Yeah, that one's got to go on the list. I mean, we've been to so many of these things, haven't we?
But there's so many pops up that we don't know about.
They're everywhere. I mean, we did the one at Boggabri, drove a campfire.
Yep.
So we've done that, and we've done the Shearer Shindig in Thargaminda.
Yep.
We've done a lot, but, I mean, we can't be everywhere all of the time.
That's true.
So
anyway.
The ones we don't get to, we find out about for our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, apart from all these wonderful discussions, even mine, don't forget mine, we kick off with mine, all about the mighty Murray.
Yeah.
Thank you, Wikipedia. And apart from all of this, we've also got a sensational selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Now, listeners, stick around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the mighty Murray, okay? I'm going to give you some history on the Murray River. And it all began about 40 million years ago. Now, this was through the forces of water and geological uplifting. The valley that cradles Australia's greatest river began to take shape. The Murray is a river whose character encompasses environmental beauty. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's rich in heritage and history, and there's busy townships along there and major regional centres as well. Now, with the amazing tourism experience and a world-class agricultural food and wine region, definitely places there not to be missed, listeners. Now, it creates a border between New South Wales and Victoria, and it's the world's, well, it's rates in about the, I think, the 16th longest river. Okay, now it's over 2,500 kilometres. It's huge. Now, it's a bed for several rivers, including the Darling and the Murrumbidgee, of course, which is on its journey from the Australian Alps before flowing through South Australia to the Southern Ocean. Now, it sits in the Murray-Darling Basin, draining most of inland Victoria and New South Wales and, of course, southern Queensland from the western side of the Great Dividing Range. Now, it was first discovered by a couple of European travellers, explorers, if you like. No, and they weren't backpackers. Hume and Hovell. Now, back in the 1800s, 1824, I think it was. Now, it wasn't until 5 years later, however, that Charles Sturt navigated down the Murrumbidgee to encounter the Murray and named it after Sir George Murray. Now, when his exploration party encountered the Darling Connection. Now, you imagine back in the 1800s, the Murray River would have been like a superhighway. Paddle steamers were used, okay? They used to carry wool and wheat and other goods up and down the river system, including the Murray-Darling, Murrumbidgee rivers. Now, since settlement of the river basin was so late, the introduction of the railroad came much sooner to the river towns, and it had a large impact on the steamers along the Murray. Irrigation was introduced in 1887 by Canadian George Chaffee around Mildura in Victoria and Renmark, South Australia. Now, this greatly accelerated the settlement and exploitation of the river's water supply. In 1918, a commission was formed to manage water supply, and it also coordinated the construction of storage locks and weirs to reduce the effects of drought and flood. Today, the water flow is still managed by these locks on the river from Yarrawonga in Victoria to Blanchetown, lock number one in South Australia. Millions of people rely on the Murray as a source of water for domestic and industrial use, and it plays a significant part in Australia's economy. A large range amount of species can be found living on the river and around the river basin, including emus, koalas, western grey kangaroos, bearded dragon lizards, red-rumped parrots, black swans, pelicans, and even dolphins. Listeners, yes, even dolphins closer to the ocean. Also plentiful of fish such as Murray cod, bream, perch, and that pesky introduced species which they call redfin, which, of course, if you catch a redfin, it's illegal to put it back in the water. Redfin are an English perch that was introduced, and they're such a pest. They're like the European carp. If you catch any of those ones, you got to either hit them over the head with something and feed them to the pelicans or whatever else is flying about. Or just throw them in your campfire. Don't put them back in the river because they really are a nuisance. Well, there you go, listeners. I hope you found some of that information interesting. I know I did. 2,500 kilometres long, one of the 16th longest rivers in the world. And there's something else I'm going to make mention of that you may not be aware of, and that is the story of the Murray River flag. Now, it's one of the oldest flags in Australia, okay? Now, this came about before Federation. The Australian colonies used to fly the Union Jack from the United Kingdom. Now, however, back in the 1850s, I think it was, you know, our sense of national pride emerged. Yes, it did indeed. And varied unofficial flags often featured the Southern Cross constellation and were designed and flown. Now, the Murray River flag first appeared at Goolwa to honour the first paddle steamer on the Murray River, the Mary Ann, on the barge Eureka. Now, it's the only flag in the world named in honour of the river. The flag was described and it was also reported of the Australian Register as the flag bears the red cross with the four horizontal blue bars. Now, the cross being charged with five stars as emblems of the colonies, while the upper corner is taken up with the British connection, which was, I guess, depicted by the Union Jack. Now, it has often been named, we understand, the Murray River flag, and has been said that the blue bars represent the four major rivers that run into the Murray River, which, of course, is the Murrumbidgee, the Lachlan and the Darling. Now, the Lower Murray flags, used predominantly in South Australia, is designed by the use of the pale blue bands, which, of course, represent the lighter-coloured water of the lower reaches of the Murray. And the Upper Murray flag has the darker blue bands on the, on its flag. And that, of course, is representing the darker waters of the river's upper regions. Now, the designer was also the house flag of the Murray River Steam Navigation Co., which suggests that the lineal descendant of the original flag design. So no specimen, I must point out, no specimen of or fragment of the original Murray flag is known to exist today, as far as I'm concerned, or as far as I'm aware. Now, listeners, all this talk of flags and the mighty Murray and so on and so forth has inspired me to select a song for you, okay? And the one I'm going to put on for you right now is one made famous, of course, by Johnny Williamson, one of our great, great Australian country singers and conservationist. And the song I'm going to play for you is a number called A Flag of Our Own.
Ned Kelly came round to see me today. I guess I was dreaming, oh, dumbfounded, I couldn't think what to say. Oh, I beckoned him in, but he shook his head. He said, I'm a bit grubby and a bit poorly bred. I'd rather we yarned out the back in the shed. I can leave my boots on that way. Well, he took a stiff whiskey and laid down his gun. He said, I won't keep you long, 'cause I've gotta run. Gotta ride to the mountains before night is done. Whoa. He said, words got around about the music you play. You truly believe in the fair income way. That the bush must remain for our spirit to stay, and we must have a flag of our own. He said, I learned long ago when I was still young, like the lizard that spits and sticks out his tongue. Oh, the way to get shot is to carry a gun. Oh, there's a new world order, the leaders all shout, and everyone's frantic, they're gonna miss out. And the red, white and blues are still marching about. Oh, we must have a flag of our own. This is Australia and that's where we're from. We're not Yankee sidekicks or second class pawns. And tell the frogs what they can do with their bomb. And we must have a flag of our own. Yeah, this is Australia and
sidekicks or second-class bombs, and tell the frogs what they can do with their bomb, and we must have a flag of our own.
My name is Phil C, and yes, I am in Deniliquin, and I am speaking with Neville Pertle. Now, he is the managing director of the Pertle Group and also the owner of the depot, historic vehicle and memorabilia collection. How are you today, Neville?
Yeah, I'm fantastic, yes.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. Now, tell us a little bit about this museum. Like, when I first walked in, you walk in, it looks like a small shop.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away too much, but then you go through this magical door and it's got the most impressive collection of motor vehicles in absolute pristine condition, covering decades. How long is it taking you to put this together?
Yeah, well, it's a lifetime, I suppose, and family lifetime, you know, family business. Our family business is actually celebrating 70 years this year.
Okay.
So we've got a lot of history in that. We're in the bus and transport industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the stuff that we've collected or hung on to over those years. And then when I wanted to do something better, it all started with old Rosie, the bus down there.
I heard about that. And that was an old school bus or something, is that correct?
Yeah, she was the oldest registered. When she came in here, she was the oldest registered school bus in Australia.
Right.
And I wanted somewhere better to put her.
Okay.
Because we had people used to come, and they knew about her, and they'd come to visit, and it was stuck in a shed and covered in dust and whatever else, and we needed to do something better.
Right.
And then we were fortunate enough to, there was some grant funding going around.
Yes.
And with that, we thought, well, we'll put the money together and we'll do something better. And then it just grew, the idea grew and grew from there.
Okay.
And so we've gone from, you know, as you said, we've got probably less than a 300 square metre retail front that opens into a 3,000 square metre museum.
It's amazing. It's like the TARDIS. It's like a little telephone box that you walk into it. And then you go through that next door, and it's huge.
Yeah.
Now, how many cars would you have? How many cars, how many buses, roughly, do you know?
On display, there's half a dozen buses, and there's, I think there's 60 or 70 cars.
Right.
And then the trucks as well.
Right.
And for some reason, I just like old fire trucks too, so they're in there. And there's other stuff that we've still got stored in other areas.
In other areas.
Yeah, to be restored and or just to rotate
To rotate the display.
Display, yeah.
Yeah, because
And we do have other people's stuff here too, then that's we want to encourage that over time.
So the locals that have got exceptional vehicles.
There's some exceptional cars down there that are on loan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so what would be in your idea or the most pressured one down there of yours? What would it be?
Look, after Rosie, probably my personal favourite, there's the LE Monaro,
right.
Which was probably the first later model historic car that I bought.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one that I bought and I love is the FC dual cab ute.
Okay.
Yeah. And it has a throws across to the Elvis theme because it's got Elvis murals on it and James Dean and whatever, which then brings my wife's love of Elvis and
Elvis
rock and roll,
yeah.
Which inspired a lot of the memorabilia that's here.
Well, this room we're sitting in now, which is called the Cadillac room, you've got a bar here, and it actually looks like the dashboard of a car with a radio.
It was done by the local signwriter. He's done all this work in here and recreated that dash, and it's out of the Cadillac that's on display downstairs.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So you've personally have been collecting. How long's the museum been open?
We've only been open a year.
A year?
Yeah.
Oh my. Yeah, where were the vehicles before that?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and then as we knew this was coming along, we collected more.
Collected more?
As we've gone along, yeah. And then there was stuff, so some of the buses are on loan and this sort of stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But the ones you bought, because everything on the display is absolutely gleaming, as you would expect it to be. But you said you haven't done that much restoration. That's just how you've acquired them.
No, yeah, we found them, yeah. We've been lucky enough to find the vehicles that people have put their love into, I suppose, and it was time to move on.
Right.
And, we've been able to pick them up as we've gone along.
Fantastic. Yeah. So do you see yourself getting bigger and bigger, or are you just going to try and keep everything in this area but rotate the display occasionally?
We want to rotate the display, but at the same time, we do have a stage 2 plan to expand into our old workshop.
Okay.
Out along the back, which will again, give us more room, particularly for, I want to create more space for the commercial vehicles, the trucks and the buses.
The trucks and the buses,
yeah.
And your fire trucks, you
see. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So what would you suggest for a person to come in? I mean, obviously, if you're a car enthusiast, you could spend a day here.
Yeah.
Would you say, what would be the minimum time you'd recommend
a visitor? You're not getting, you know, value for your money or your best use of your time unless you're going to commit 2 or 3 hours.
Two or three hours?
Yeah,
to come. Because, I mean, it's not that expensive to come in either.
No, it's
$15 or something to come in. So, you know, $15 well spent if you're interested in cars to wander around here.
Yeah, and plus the memorabilia. It's great to hear people. They'll have a husband and wife come in and the wife begrudgingly comes in with the husband, and then the husband's trying to drag the wife out because she's so enthralled with all the memorabilia.
All the memorabilia. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about some of the memorabilia then, because I was just blown away by the cars initially.
So I suppose we're out of the fuel industry as well as the bus industry, so there's a throwback to all the bowsers and all the fuel equipment.
Right.
And then upstairs we've tried to recreate scenes from the past.
Okay.
We've got the lounge room set up with the TV, and it has the reel on there that, you know, shows you the development of the Holden and this sort of stuff, and then the kitchen as it was back in the 40s or 50s, and then even the backyard over here that's been set up with the clothesline, it's amazing how and the chairs there where the people can sit and knit.
Okay.
And we've had people teaching. We walked in one day, and the lady there teaching another young girl how to knit. That's just that passing on those memories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. And this Cadillac room, what inspired it? What was the idea of it?
Well, the Cadillac room was originally a space that I wanted to create to be able to bring school kids here to teach them about transport.
Fantastic.
To teach them about the history and, you know, where the cars and buses come from.
Right.
And then out of that, it grew, you know, let's make it multifunctional so that we can, you know, have more purpose than one, just, you know, and it grew into a fully functioning function centre.
Function centre.
Yeah.
And, I mean, do you get functions like public, public people wanting to have a party in here or something?
Yeah, parties and a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
We've had a meeting here this morning. The council had a meeting, done a breakfast meeting.
Yes.
So we cater with the diner next door, which is the cruising diner. That's a retro-style diner. It does the catering for in here. So, I think Casey probably has up to 4 or 5 functions a week in here.
Wow.
Yeah. Just all different types, whether it's meetings and parties or
parties,
seminars or
Well, it's got a brilliant backdrop, I've got to tell you. And you got the DeLorean down there as well from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
That caught Lynn's eye straight away because she's a Michael J. Fox fan.
Yeah. My family in the past we've owned a video store and my wife and son are fairly heavy into the videos and movies.
Yep.
So a lot of the stuff we've got actually has a throwback to that connection to the movies. We've got a FC taxi down there that's out of Delinquents.
Okay, yes. Remember that movie,
EJ Sedan that's out of Love Child.
Right.
Yeah, so there's James Dean's, a replica of James Dean's Porsche
Spider.
So it's just a bit of that stuff that sort of has that crossover to the movie.
Yeah.
World, which again creates that interest from the whole family.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Look, it's an amazing place. Listeners, you've got to come to see it. If you are coming through Deniliquin, don't think it's a small town with nothing. I've got to say, this depot, historic vehicle memorabilia collection, put together by Neville Pertle, absolutely a must-see here in Deniliquin.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Neville. Now, I'm going to play you a song, as I do after every chat I have. Who's your favourite Australian artist?
Probably Slim Dusty.
Slim Dusty.
Yeah.
He's a legend this place. This is going to be a legend for many more generations to come, I can guarantee it. Favourite song by Slim?
Lights on the Hill.
Lights on the Hill. Great song too. All right, listeners, stick around for more Roman Oz straight after Lights on the Hill.
It's a long straight road and the engine is deep. I can't help thinking of a good night's sleep. And the long, long roads of my life are a-calling me. These rough old hands are glued to the wheel. My eyes full of sand from the way they feel. And the lights coming over the hill are a-blinding me. It's a long, tough pole
it's time to pull. The gauge on the tank is a showing near full, and the lights coming over the hill are a blinding me. There's rain on the road, and I can feel the loads that are shifting in a dance. Too late, I see the post, and I haven't got a ghost of a chance. The song they sing is a part of my mind, and I can't believe it's really happening to me. Oh, but I'm over the edge and down the mountainside. I know they'll tell about the night I died in the rain when the lights on the hill were blinding me. Hey, bring the fiddle, give a big hand. In a dance. Too late, I see the post, and I haven't got a ghost of a chance. Oh, the windscreen wipers are a beating in time. The song they sing is a part of my mind, and I can't believe it's really happening to me. Oh, but I'm over the edge and down the mountainside. I know they'll tell about the night I died in the rain when the lights on the hill.
Good afternoon, listeners. If you've just joined us, the show is called Roman Oz. I'm Phil C, and we are chatting with Ali Orchin, and she is the treasurer and coordinator for the sponsorship at the Mungandai Show, and that's on from the 9th to the 11th of August. Hello, Ali. Thank you so much. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Phil. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I've never been to this particular event that you're involved with, the Mungandai Show. Tell us a little bit about it. Firstly, how long has it been running for?
This will be our 126th year the annual Mungandai Show. Yeah. So it's been going for a while.
126 years?
Yes.
Are you serious? Wow.
I am serious, yeah. So we celebrated 125 last year with a few special things, but 126 this year.
That is incredible. I had no idea. I was thinking you were going to say 20 or 20.
No.
126. No. Wow, that's probably as old as you and I both put together. Do you know who started the event?
I don't know, actually. It's as you probably know, it's pretty hard to get information from back then. But we did a bit of research and stuff last year, and had a special sort of memorial thing with any old photos and old paper clippings and things that we could find.
Uh-huh.
It was quite interesting reading about it. We're on the New South Wales Queensland border here, and back when it first started, they actually had to have sheep and cattle. There were issues with crossing the border.
Right.
So with any of the show, like with the competition for the cattle, the commercial cattle or the sheep display, they would judge them on the New South Wales side and then go over to the Queensland side and judge them over there.
Okay.
Thankfully now that's not a problem. We have everything at the showgrounds on the New South Wales side.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting town.
Now, you've got a lot happening. It runs over the 3 days. Starts on the 9th and goes through until the 11th. Tell us a little bit about it. You've got things like the Young Farmers Challenge, for example. What's involved in that?
Yeah, so our vice president is running that, Jess. She started it last year. It's a great, great thing. It's very, very entertaining to watch. What is in it? They have to climb panels. They've got to move things around. Obviously, it's all working as a part of a team, which
yes.
is the main thing. It's really good a really good one that we have. They, yeah, heaps of just showing all their mechanical skills and fencing and, yeah, it's entertaining.
So it sounds like there's a lot of challenges and competitions. I guess you've got wood chopping, for example, and that's pretty common in a lot of shows. And yep. You've also got grain shoveling. Now, I've not heard of grain shoveling. What's involved in that? I guess self-explanatory.
Yeah, basically, we've got a truck and we have some scales and an auger, and over the quickest time, you've got to fill the scales, you know, like get to the, like fill, put it into the auger, and yeah, then they weigh it, and yeah, you've just got to get the heaviest in. The 1 minute, I think, is what the adults do, and then the kids is about 30 seconds.
Okay.
So, yeah, timed, yeah.
I'm interested in also in your Mungandai Tyre and Battery Ute barrel race. So yep. Is this like fellas in utes?
Yeah.
Explain to us, a barrel race. They've got to get around the barrels or as quickly as possible, yep. Like you would with a stock horse?
Yep, 100%, exactly like that. We yeah, we actually had a few limos in it last year, which was quite interesting.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, no, it is what it sounds like. They've got to go around the barrels. We have a big derby arena that we use for those sort of events to keep everyone safe. And then, yeah, the party happens in the middle.
So I'm assuming the U-Butte Ute competition, these vehicles are obviously like a show and shine, are they? They're not involved in the barrel racing, the U-Butte Utes, or what's that about?
No, there might be a couple that do the Ute competition and then wander over to the Derby Arena to have a crack.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all a bit of a mixture of everyone has a go at everything usually.
Look, it sounds absolutely incredible. I've not been to it. I'd love to be there, and I want my listeners to find out about it. You've also got the two-day camp draft. What's that about?
Yep, so we've got a Friday-Saturday camp draft this year, which is really good. The camp draft committee is sort of running that for us, like under the show. But, yeah, it's really popular, and doing it on the Friday and Saturday just sort of spreads things out a little bit more for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're running a field day on Friday this year as well. My husband, who's the president, it's his idea to have a bit of a mini farm fest, mini ag clip, I suppose you'd say, of information and things like that on Friday. So that'll be something that the camp drafters, you know, if they've got time, can be involved in as well.
Okay. And apart from all of that, you've got live music?
Yeah, we've got a band coming on Saturday called 78 Sound, so that'll be good.
78 Sound, are they a country-style band or how would you describe their style of music?
Yeah, I think they're a bit of everything, country, rock, recent stuff. I've only seen a picture of them. They look quite young, so mm-hmm. I think should be a broad range of everything is what we're, hoping to get.
Fabulous. So apart from all of that, and you've also got horse events, and you've also got something for the dog lovers. You've got a pet parade, a dog high jump, and also the yard dog trials. So I guess that's mustering up the sheep with the dogs?
Yep, that is. That's, they've got a yard set up especially, then they've got to, put the sheep through the race and through the draft and up a ramp. They all get judged for that. That's going Saturday, Sunday, 2 days of that.
Right.
And, Sunday we've got the dog high jump, pet parade and the dog show.
Is this strictly sort of, when you say a dog show or a dog parade, are we talking all breeds or are they just working dogs like Kelpies and so on? Or can anybody?
All breeds. All breeds, yes. There's plenty of categories for people to enter that, range from Chihuahuas to Great Danes, if you want. anything goes.
Well, as you can imagine, a lot of our listeners that listen to the program are travelling. They're permanently living on the road or travelling a lot on the road. And a lot of the people now, the older people, prefer to travel with pets. I don't know about a Great Dane, but I have met many people. I've met many people with Chihuahuas and poodles and the like and a few Kelpies, but certainly not a Great Dane.
Well, they are most welcome to come.
So pets are welcome at this event. Now tell us, where's it going to be held at for the 3 days?
Yeah, so we've got a great showground in Mungandai.
Uh-huh.
We've got everything there. We've got a pavilion that's full of all the arts and crafts and things like that run by our auxiliary committee.
Yes.
Yeah, then we've got a wonderful bar on a hill that is really great to, you can sort of look out everywhere on the grandstand. And, yeah, got the camp drafts all there. And then the Derby Arena, like I mentioned, that we run a lot of our events in. So, yeah, you can park up there and walk around and everything's easy to get to.
So this bar you're talking about, is this your camp draft bar, which opens on Friday from 12 midday, or is it your main bar, which opens Saturday and Sunday from 10 o'clock?
Yeah, so we've got two going. Friday we're sort of based down at the camp draft arena a bit more.
Right.
That's just a little bit more central for the activities we've got on Friday night. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, everything will move up to the main bar after that.
Okay. So prices. Now let's talk about prices. You've got various different packages here. You've got day passes, Friday or Saturday. You've got the two-day pass. I've noticed here that under 12 is free on Sunday entry. Sunday is free as well. Is that correct?
Sunday is free, yep. And children under 12 are free.
Okay.
Yeah.
So camping is how does this work? Because I'm looking at your price structure here. You've got day passes, adults $18 plus $15 and children $5, for example. So if they want to stay out there, have you got facilities for them to stay, to camp up?
Yep. There's plenty of room. We sort of do ask if they could call the one of the committee members whose numbers are in here just in case. But, yeah, there's showers, toilets, plenty of room for camping. We'll have all of the areas that we need free bunted, like with bunting, already sorted. So, yeah, and camping's free, so everyone's welcome to join in.
Fantastic. Absolutely sensational event. 126 years, I cannot believe it. And you've got some great stuff here as well. You've got the market stalls happening. You've also got merch if anybody wants to take home a souvenir. You've got things like caps, truckers' caps and beanies and also stubby holders and the like.
Yep.
But apart from all of that, it sounds like you're going to have a fabulous event out there. The gates open from 7 a.m. Friday, Saturday and Sunday for our listeners, and they're open till late. So I guess when it starts to fizzle, that's when you close up the gates for the night.
Yeah, that's right.
And how many are you expecting? Like 126 years, it's been running an awful long time. How many do you normally average out there? Do people need to sort of make inquiries early? You got people coming back like from year to year that regularly come to the event?
Yeah, we do have a lot of people that usually come, and we tie it in with our junior rugby league, so it's a home game,
right.
For Mungandyke. So we're hoping, you know, St George, Lightning Ridge, Dirranbandi, those sort of closer towns, it should work in with families to come. I think like we sort of average over 1,000 people through the gate over on Saturday.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're hoping with the three-day event and a few extra things this year that, yeah, well, that might be a little bit higher. But, yeah, I mean, it's an amazing effort.
I can imagine so.
Yeah.
Look, before I let you go, there's a couple of things which I've been keeping right to the end of our interview. Header versus picker. Now, tell our listeners, what is the header versus the picker event?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
It is absolutely amazing. One of our old presidents, Stace, she came up with this a few years ago. We've actually won a prize with the New South Wales Ag Shows for an innovative prize for coming up with this.
Okay.
So we've got, last year we had three headers and one picker.
Right.
And in the Derby Arena, they just go at it, at each other.
So
and
for the benefit, just let me interrupt you, Ali, for the benefit of our listeners, a header, what is a header and what is a picker? And how do they go at it?
Yep. So a header is the big machines that they use to harvest with.
Right.
And a cotton picker is what they use to harvest cotton with. So
okay.
Very big machine. And they will be in the Derby Arena. Have a look at our Facebook page. There's plenty of videos and pictures from last year to have a look at if you still can't quite understand it.
Okay.
But it's amazing. It's so entertaining. And it's, we do everything, obviously, so it's all safe.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, it's worth having a look at. And we're doing that on Friday night.
At 7:30 on Friday in the evening, 7:30. Yep. Now, when you say they go at it, they're not racing each other. They're actually sort of crashing into each other, trying to demolish each other.
No, it is. Yep, they are very much versus each other. So, and the last man standing, wins the first prize. Okay. And,
I cannot wait to see this. And for the benefit of our listeners, if you want to see it in advance, you can go onto the Facebook page, which is the Mungindi Show Society. Listeners, check it out, because this is going to be a fabulous 3-day event. They've also got monster trucks out there on Saturday at 6:30 in the evening. The dates are from 9th through until the 11th of August. Yep. And if you're out in the Mungindi area, do yourselves a favour, listeners. You know, you want to check this one out. 126 years it's been running, and it's just going to be a fabulous event. Absolutely brilliant. I cannot wait to see a header versus a picker.
So good.
Thank you so much, Ali, for taking the time to talk with us today. Absolutely loved it, and I know our listeners are going to be thrilled. They're going to go out to your Facebook page, I'm sure, and start following that. Check out the header versus picker, folks, monster trucks, all the other fabulous things that's happening at this event. We're going to have to wind this up now, Ali, and I always play an Aussie song. Do you have a favourite Australian singer or band?
Yeah, I do. I'm partial to a bit of Cold Chisel.
Right.
If that would be good, please.
Okay.
Maybe some Flame Trees.
Flame Trees, one of my most favourite Chisel tracks, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear that. Thank you so much, Ali, for taking the time to chat with us.
No worries. Thanks, Phil. Thank you very much.
There you go, listeners. That is Ali Orchin. She is the treasurer and the sponsorship coordinator for the Mungindi Show, 9th to 11th of August. We'll be back with more of Roman Oz straight after Cold Chisel's Flame Trees. Thank you, Ali.
Thank you.
Factory out of workers, just holding hands.
Welcome back to the show, listeners. My name is Phil C. This is Roaming Oz on allaussieradio.com.au, now syndicated to 97.7 Tasman FM, 87.6 Backwater Country. And on the phones with us this afternoon, we have the secretary of the Hebel Camp Draft, and her name is Shannon Koch. How are you this afternoon?
I'm going well, thank you. How are you going?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you so much. Welcome to the program, and thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
That's no worries at all.
Now, tell us all about the event. How long has it been running for?
It's been running for quite a number of years. The Rodeo Association was formed back in about the 1990s, I think, and my pop and a couple of other locals in the area started it. And they used to run rodeos and gymkhanas and motorkhanas and quite a number of events. Now we sort of run more, we try to run a camp draft every year, and we've also recently, in the past 2 years, brought back the gymkhana and motorkhana events.
Okay. Now I understand it's the biggest event run in Hebel. Is that correct?
It sure is.
Okay.
We bring about 100 competitors and then their family members into Hebel for the weekend. We get everyone to go down to the pub on Friday night for the meat tray raffles and joker draw and have a barbecue or something up there. So we support the local pub.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, there's camp drafting action Saturday and Sunday.
Fair enough. Now, you need a lot of cattle for this, don't you? How much cattle do you get down there for this event?
We're going to use probably 800 to 900 head of cattle.
Right.
We're lucky enough that one family is going to donate all of those, and they happen to be a long-time supporter of our camp draft, and they've recently started the Three Rivers Meat Butcher Shop in Durrumbandy and in Lightning Ridge.
Okay.
Our delicious meat from there as well.
Fantastic. Now, apart from the adults, you've also got some kids that are involved in the gymkhana as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so we have events for kids 5 years and up. They can do the bending and flag and barrel races and western bend and just whatever other gymkhana events we have time for in the day. They seem to love it. Plenty of ribbons and whatnot. And we also try and run a pinata for them in the Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
So they absolutely love it.
Absolutely love it. So what do you think they like more, riding the horses and trying to do the events or just beating the hell out of the pinata?
I'd say the pinata.
Gosh, God love them. Now, what you said as young as five. How does a five-year-old manage to ride a horse and try and go through barrels and flag racing and stuff like that? I mean, that's pretty demanding for some of the adults, isn't it?
Yeah, well, most of the time, little five-year-olds, their parents are leading them on foot. So
okay.
It's whoever's mum or dad is the fastest on foot usually wins that.
I get it. And what about the prizes? Is there prizes for the kids? Are there prizes for the grown-ups? What's it all about? Is it more just a fun event, or do you get a lot of really serious, I guess, cowboys down there trying to win some stuff?
Yeah, we've got over $10,000 in prize money for the camp draft.
Right.
And then there's prizes for cutout, like higher cutout, and then there's also prizes for the gymkhana events like age champion out of the kids and whatever.
Okay. But
also ribbons as well, where we get a lot of our prizes and stuff from donations from our sponsors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've also, like you mentioned, the hotel. Now, every good Australian loves a beer. And you've also got the barbecue. How does that work? They just rock up and buy a meal there and obviously they pay for their beer. How does that part of it work?
Yeah, that's it. So we'll just have a barbecue around the side of the Hebel Hotel and they'll just pay for steak and sausage sandwiches or whatever, and then we've got the community meat tray raffle. It changes to a different community committee every week,
mm-hmm.
and it will be the Rodeo Association that week as well.
Right.
So buying meat tray tickets supports our club as well, and there's usually three meat trays to one, usually a bottle of rum or a six-pack of beer.
Right.
And then the Joker draw, I think, might be up to about 1,800 by the time our event rolls around.
Wow, okay. Now you're talking my language. A Joker draw and a bottle of rum, I'm in. Now, what about camping and things like that? Like, if people want to come and spend the entire weekend at the event, have you got facilities there for caravanners and so on, motorhomes, or where do they stay?
We've got free camping down at the showgrounds. We've got no power available, though.
Okay.
Alternatively, there's the caravan park. There's some powered sites up there, or there's free camping there, and they've got all toilets and showers and everything as well.
Okay, fair enough. Now, what about costs for the event? How much does it cost to come for the weekend? You got daily prices or just a weekend ticket? How does that part of it work?
No, that's all free. The only thing that costs any money, obviously, is coming down and having like a bacon egg roll for breakfast, or coming down for dinner or whatever. There's a cost there, but coming down to watch, there's no cost at all.
No costs at all. So a complete free event, listeners, okay? Free. There's no such thing as a free meal, but you can get free entertainment here at the Hebel Camp Draft. So what a fabulous idea. And do you do any other fundraising there at the event, or is it just a complete free other than what goes on at the hotel and the barbecues and so forth?
We've run a raffle as well that will help us buy some more things that we need down at the grounds. We're also running a bit of an initiative because a lot of people like to change their camp draft nominations right when you think you've got it all sorted a couple of days before the camp draft.
Right. So
we've made a thing. If you want to change it after a certain date, you've got to give $5 per change.
Uh-huh.
And that $5 is going to go towards the Common Ground Foundation.
Okay. So there you go. Don't go changing your draft right 5 minutes before. Now, what about people? How many people? You say it's been running a few years now. Your pop started it off all those years ago. How many people do you normally get to the event?
We usually get about that 100 competitors plus their families, and then overnight time. We have music playing and whatever, so we have a few of the locals come down, so we usually expect to cater for 150 to 180 people.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I hope you get a lot more than 150 to 180. I'm sure it's going to be a fabulous event. I've not been to it myself. Fingers crossed I can make it there next year, though, because it sure sounds like a lot of fun.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, Shannon. Before we wind this up now, I've got to play your song, and it has to be Aussie. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer or band?
Yeah, the Wolf Brothers go quite well.
The Wolf Brothers. Have you seen them perform live?
Yes, I have, and they're very good. I'd recommend going to watch them.
Oh, definitely. They are sensational, those two boys, Nick and Tom Wolf. Absolutely brilliant. Pity you couldn't get them at your camp draft. That'd certainly sell out an event.
Definitely.
For sure. So what song by the Wolf Brothers? Because you know they've got a brand new one that just came out last week called Little by Little. You got a favourite of theirs?
I'm going to go with an old one, This Crazy Life, Please.
This Crazy Life. I'm hearing a baby chittering in the background. That you've obviously got a little one, so that would explain your crazy life.
Yes, that's right.
Fair enough. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and being part of the program. And, I can't make it this year, but fingers crossed we'll get there for next year.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for taking the time to interview me about the event.
Thank you so much. So there you go, listeners. That is the secretary, Shannon Koch, her name is, and she's in charge of the Hebel Camp Draft there. And if you do want to go there, it costs you nothing, except, of course, if you want to buy a beer or a meal. Thank you so much, Shannon. We're going to wind this up now. Thank you for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
We'll be back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after the Wolf Brothers' Crazy Life.
Sometimes you're on fire, and sometimes you just get burned. but I wouldn't have it any other way. Driving away too fast. Times like these, man, they never seem to last. Here and now, with the sun going down, we're gonna pass this bottle around. Lighting up the night like a cigarette glowing. Doing anything to keep the good times going. Yeah, it's a beautiful ride. Oh, yeah.
There we go, folks. That's the Wolf Brothers from the album of the same name title, This Crazy Life. And what a sensational band those two are. That is Nick and Tom Wolf, of course, and, of course, a good family friend. And he is called Brody Rainbird. Sensational band. And, of course, rose to prominence after placing second in season 6 of Australia's Got Talent. Well, they should have won it. And they didn't. They came second. But I've got to tell you, they're kicking heaps of goals right now, okay? And especially their brand new song that just came out last week. It's called Little by Little.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.